Do you ever find a guitar that was in Franco's attic, no?
Which one?
The Yamaha. I had three gears.
Oh, you have a guitar of yours, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Where is it, in your gaff?
Yeah.
You said to me the action on it is so bad you'd need an arm like a leg to play it.
Yeah, my fucking voice grips. Make great kindling.
Hi folks, and thanks for listening to this Tortoise Shack podcast. That little clip you just heard is a tiny little excerpt from the wonderful Fresh Batch podcast with Damien Dempsey, and it's out right now on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We're delighted to have Dean and Sparky on board, and we are looking forward to weeks of entertainment and an open and vulnerable conversations, because the lads seem to bring the best out of everybody that they talk to. If you're not already subscribed to The Fresh Batch, you can find it on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're not already a member of the Tortoise Shack, please join us. It is 2024, the year of elections, and we have lots and lots of work to do to try and cover them in as much depth as we can, but we can't do that without your support. So while you're listening to this podcast, click the link that says patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Join us. It's the price of a fancy cup of coffee or a cheap pint nowadays, and it helps keep the mics on and the conversations like the one you're about to listen to keep happening. We've no ads, we've no sponsors, we rely entirely on you, and it is activism. You cannot say that the Tortoise Shack is just a podcast platform. The work we do goes well beyond that, whether it's fundraising in Gaza, whether it's working with people who are bogus self-employed, or whether it's amplifying stories that need support to get out to a wider listening audience. And there's thousands of you listening. It's crazy. Thousands of listening. Very few of you chipping in. I understand that. Why pay for it when it's free? But I'd like to think that if you bumped into me in a coffee shop, you'd buy me a cup of coffee. Think of this as the way that you're buying me that cup of coffee. And as I said, for you, it's probably, what, one fewer pint a month. But for us, it's literally lights on, mics on, and we can continue to keep going and throw in as many haymakers as we can. Even if we fight and lose, it's better to have had the fight sometimes. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Please click that link. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and folks, I have seen a lot of referendums and a lot of elections and a lot of discourse when it comes to politics in my life. And we've had conversations with people. We've had conversations with lecturer Owen Daly on the upcoming referendums that are taking place this Friday, and how the it's largely a lot of symbolism in them. And yet we have seen, even if it is symbolic, the state has made efforts and some of the organizations have made efforts to not speak to people who are more impacted by particularly the care referendum than I'd like to think. And Martin, I know you felt very strongly about this to the point where it's put you off entirely.
I think what you said about symbolic is right. I also think it's shambolic. So I think it's sham symbolic or sim shambolic, whichever you prefer, Tony.
Yeah, it is worrying because, as I said, there's a lot of debate happening now, and it's gotten a bit nasty. And I've seen it's been played by people who should know better are actually making it out that anybody who has genuine concerns is raising issues of their lived experience and what it means. They've been more or less told that you're the bully here. You're the problem. And that has become something. And again, I'm not supposed to be, as a broadcaster, put my thumb on the scales, but I have said already, I'm a no on the care vote. So cards on the table. Anyway, look, we are delighted to have a brilliant panel joining us today to talk about this. And it is really important that we talk this right now, because we want as many people to have as much information as they can before they go to the polls. So we're delighted to be joined by Dr. Margaret Kennedy, who has spent a lifetime lecturing and teaching about a disability. We have Anne-Marie Flanagan, who is a legend in the activism circle, and I would say someone who I interviewed previously and intimidated me then and intimidates me now, so that's a good thing, I'd imagine. And then we are joined by Stefan Lina, who's for the first time, who's also a carer, a person with disability, and someone who's working in to gain much more insight in this. So people who are absolutely invested in not just people with disabilities and their rights, but the role of carers and that. So thank you so much, ladies, for joining us. We really appreciate it. If I can, Stefan, can I go to you first? Because I think I think it's really important that listening to our little intro there, your own experience and why do you feel or what do you feel people should be doing on the 42B referendum?
Well, I obviously I think people should be voting no for 42B. I think it is, to be honest, I think it's rather insulting than condescending. I am a carer for my mother, and she raised six children, and the implication of this, her introduction of an article that there is just jumbled mess, is that she and other people like her are a burden on the state, which is very condescending. It is underrates her. My mother is definitely not a burden on the state. She is still a very feisty woman. She's 91, but she's still very, very feisty. There's times where she can totally and utterly surprise you, where she comes back with a quick-witted answer. So I am speaking for her. I want to speak up for her. My mother, because of her age, she grew up during a time that helped really build this country. And the fact now that people like her are being dismissed is so insulting and so condescending. I mean, we're here because the country is the way it is because of that generation. Because they are so tough, and they were so tough, and they went through so much, and they really dragged us through so much.
And they did it with interest rates through the roof. They did it when, you know, it was there was no easy times pre the 1990s. It was one just dark hole that went back for 50 years. But and these people paid through the nose in taxes, and many of them moved abroad and moved back again. Yeah. Do you think
my father said that the first 3 days of his pay went to the tax man?
Yes. And that is, and these are the people that built the country. And as you've said, you were a person with a disability, minding somebody else with a disability. And that is so common in this country.
Yes.
And yet no regard is paid to it, particularly when you get into, you know, people who are elderly. It is one disabled elderly person taking care of another disabled elderly person. And the very narrow view, and it seems to be a very patriarchal view of the political lens, is that, you know, this is your burden to bear. I think that's really the way they're looking at it. Margaret, could I ask you, your perception on this referendum, what angle do you come at it from, Margaret?
I was furious, absolutely furious. I just read the wording of it and my heart sank, because I just thought we're in a modern era now. You know, we're 21st century and we're using Dickensian language about disabled people being burdens on the state, and how we're going to look after all the carers who are looking after, God love them, the poor crips that are here in wheelchairs. I mean, it was just the sort of language that you would use 50 years ago. And we've moved into a rights-based era now. And I couldn't believe that they had come up with this definition of carers and no sight or sound of a disabled person at the drafting stage. I find it humiliating. I find it degrading. I find it totally against my feminist views of inclusion, of independence, of everybody is equal in this society. But according to this referendum, according to the care component anyway, we're past our sell-by date and we're burdens, and we cause an awful lot of stress and strain. It's not the sort of dialogue or rhetoric that I favour. I mean, I have a neuromuscular disease. I'm in a wheelchair. I'm 71. and I'm a proud disabled woman. And I was totally sidelined, ignored. And I was furious, absolutely furious. And I came into the group to be with this equality, not care, firmly fixed as someone who is a feminist, very much in the rights agenda, very much sat outside the door many times in my wheelchair in the cold and freezing night, where Enda Kenny would come out with a cup of coffee for one of us. And that was about all we got. You know, it's humiliating to find our own country treating us like non-citizens.
Yeah, yeah. Margaret, can I get, sorry, just on that, how do you feel about other people getting to choose to be pragmatic about your rights?
Well, it's emblematic of patriarchal medical model way of looking at disabled people, that we have always been seen as not quite the same standard as non-disabled people. We have not come out perfect. And, you know, I was born deaf. My mother had German measles. I was born deaf. I have hearing aids, and now I'm in a wheelchair. And you're always looked down. You sort of feel at the bottom of the ladder all the time. And when you see the light, and thank God a lot of disabled people are seeing the light, they're saying, hang on, you can't be saying this. You can't be using this language. You can't be talking about how our carers are taking the burden of the state and contributing to the common good by looking after us. We don't want that model. We don't want to be looked after. We don't want the care model. What we want is an independent model, independent living, independent life, independent support system provided by the state because we are citizens of right. And this caring claptrap has to go. It's not part of our lexicon anymore. It's gone.
And not only are people contribute to society. This is the, and I'm going to come to you now, Anne-Marie, because I can tell you are perfectly imperfectly waiting to have a go at this. So gloves off you go, Anne-Marie. Just unmute yourself there.
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having us, because our voices were silenced for months and months and months. I just want to actually let you know that I wrote to the Citizens Assembly. And even when there was a discussion and analysis of what care would look like, I already knew from my 30 years of activism that this was going to actually manifest in this way. I was concerned that the first wave feminist analysis of burden of care was outdated anyway. It's really unhelpful. And what's really interesting is now we find ourselves, me anyway, as a disabled woman, as a wife, as a mother, as a contributor to the state with a massive mortgage. You know, I paid the higher rate of tax. I asked myself, what else can I do to be viewed as an equal member of society, as a woman that's as valid as other women? And like, I try not to get too upset about it because like it hurts me in my heart. You know, sometimes we think this is you know, that the politics of our experience, that we can separate ourselves and then we can, you know, turn off the microphone and we just get on with our lives. But, you know, look, we have to live it every single day, the three of us and many other disabled women and women in support role. So, like you asked, Margaret, you know, what does it feel like when other people are talking about us? Well, to say it's horrific is an understatement. I remember reaching out to the National Women's Council of Ireland in 2018 when the government at the time actually said that it would call a referendum on 42.1. And I was so excited because I remember being like a staunch feminist at 21, 22, 23 years of age. And yeah, get rid of, you know, burn the bras, get rid of 42.1. And it was so exciting. And that's what we wanted. And then when I heard that a number of organizations were like, pause, actually, no. We want to discuss care. I thought, oh God, where are we going now? And I have to say, I want to challenge the women's movement and say there's an internalized sexism going on. There is an internalization of misogyny that's been blamed on men. And in this instance, I can say that women are hurting women. And that is what is revolting about this campaign. It's a disgrace. And we sometimes overuse language like privileged. You know, but I do think there's a privilege that's been misplaced for, and I've actually been very open. I've spoken to the National Women's Council of Ireland. I've said to them exactly how I feel, because as I know, Tony and Martin, you've said, you know, I don't hold back. And I have been very direct speaking in terms of the complete abuse of groups of women who feel very vulnerable and who feel they need to be listened to for. This idea that we're going to wake up on Saturday, 42.1, that's their vision, would be removed from it, they'd be replaced with something else. And I've said to non-disabled women who don't have significant roles in supporting other people, you know, where are you going to be when disabled women and non-disabled women are trapped in our homes, when my job is going to be at risk because the state could click with fingers and say, no, we're not funding Anne-Marie's personal assistance services anymore. So what, do I lose my job? Does my husband leave up his career? Do we go into poverty? Does our mortgage book get paid? Like, this is serious, don't it?
Margaret, I'm going to cut.
What I really want to say to that, Anne-Marie, you're bringing up all sorts of things in my head. And one of the things is they assume we're going to be in families who can do with some caring. They have no other option. They assume that we're going to come from a nice, cozy, a family that will love us and care for us and feed us and dress us and wash us and wipe us and do whatever is needed to be done. And that's all going to be honky-dory until we're 60, 70 and 80 and our parents are 70, 80, 90 and in the grave. I mean, what about those disabled people who are in situations of abuse?
Mm.
Where they have never been valued, they have never been given a voice, where families are walking all over them. And I'm not saying they're all the families out there doing it, but there is a proportion.
Of course,
and I
not.
Know that from 30 years of
And we take this into consideration, Margaret. We recognize that elder abuse exists, and we recognize that this exists. But the idea that it's carer abuse, that hasn't yet sunk in, that elder abuse is often carer abuse.
And they have not factored in that some of us don't have what my family are too old, because I'm the youngest, and they're all in their 80s, and they wouldn't be able to look after me. But they haven't factored in those of us, I call disabled people, who are in a dire situation, whose only option is stay in that situation because you know it, or go into a nursing home when you're 20, 30, 40.
Go get put in. Do you remember during the Celtic Tiger when on every satellite of Dublin they put as in the roads out of Dublin, they put a Woody's on the outskirts of everywhere. So there was always a Woody's put there. Now they're putting nursing homes. Now they're saying let's put them out there where we don't really need to look. And it is I know so many people who talk to me and they're going, it goes back to us, Martin, 7 years ago when we were one of the first times we were talking to Tom Clonan about something entirely different, and whatever situation it was, he just said, I clumsily made a point about, oh, you have a son who has a disability, and he shot right back to me and said, no, my son hasn't a disability, the state disables him. And he completely put me in a box at the time. Can I ask Stefan a question, if you don't mind, Martin? Sorry. Just listen to what Margaret said there. The you had to then probably, I don't know if you've seen the video, it's gone viral, of the Taoiseach more or less saying, yeah, it is. It is your responsibility. It is on your shoulder, Stefan. It's not really nothing to do with me.
Nothing to do with.
And I want to point out this is coming from the position of privilege of the man who is earning a huge salary and also had the privilege to walk away from a law. He was studying law to go into medicine. So there's clearly a huge class divide here as well as a disability apartheid as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's someone who's not really living in the real world or understands what people with disabilities, what the elderly and people, the family who support them, what they actually face day to day, the struggles that they all of the parties face day to day. And he's so out of touch. He's so out of touch. It is just shocking, awful. And it shows, it was a slip, in a way, it was a slip of the tongue because he revealed his attitude towards the amendment. He told us basically there in that moment what he meant by strive, what that strive was going to involve, that it was going to be the responsibility of the family and that the state weren't going to really strive at all. I think it revealed so much about him. And it told us what we could expect, what we can expect after Friday the 8th of this 42B wins, we can expect. And you mentioned there earlier about people with people who are looking after other people have or their supporters. They are, it's really, I have to be honest, it's more teamwork than it is when you're doing it, it's teamwork with the other person. You have to respect them.
And but it is.
70%, according to the, a friend was telling me just before I came on here that according to figures at the moment, 70% of people who, family members who support are have a disability.
That's a whopping rate. And it is. And I can understand because I see it in my own. And I can see it in my own family. Anne Marie, I'm going to come to you next. Do you think that the attitude, which was very openly expressed during COVID, that, you know, we can afford to lose people with disabilities, we can afford to lose people who are elderly, they have comorbidities, we should open up, who cares? And I took very great exception to this when it was happening.
You've got to say, just be very clear, you took great exception as a person who is vulnerable, a person with a disability.
Yeah, yeah.
And a person
yeah.
who...
And I'm not going to use the bad language I used at the journalist who was angry at the time, but he did deserve both barrels and I gave it to him. But do you think that has exacerbated the situation, Anne-Marie, where now they're just more open about saying, look, you're a burden on the state. It's just, you are.
I think it certainly spotlighted the real attitude of where disabled people and other people who are not seen as contributing members of society. I think, you know, it's a capitalist analysis, and this is a capitalist referendum. And this has nothing to do with women's rights. It has nothing to do with the rights of, in quotes, people who have a care role. This is the government insulating itself. It is future-proofing, and which is saying, we invest in people who we believe will give us money back to the state. And we tried touched on it earlier, you know, what do I have to do to prove myself? Just because I have an impairment doesn't mean that I'm not contributing members of society. But even that in itself can be a dodgy analysis, because for me, the question is, what does it mean to be human? And actually, this is very, very emotional, because even within the disabled people's movement over the years, you know, we found ourselves trying to legitimize our lives by saying, I can work, I can live in my own home, I can, you know, we lived it. But then I asked myself, well, where is the value? Why is the person who uses different way of communicating, who maybe needs 24-hour support, like, are there human needs and their humanity? Is the smile they give to their big sister, is the love that they bring to their family? Like, I'm just... I just find it really overwhelming in how we are, commodifying humanity. And if ever there was a referendum, that's really proving itself. But what gives me hope is, like, once we did a call to action, then, you know, Margaret was in her house tweeting, I'm doing my little bit, and you had this other wonderful man, Michael, who hasn't joined us, and then Stefan, and we found each other, and we created equality, not care. And then we began to expose that the referendum could do to us and our family members and the breakdown of society. Because I can tell you, if this is passed, we are going to have a state that actually legitimizes people as being burdens. And I have to please beg women and beg men to say, this is not okay. And this idea that, well, if we don't take the opportunity now that's being, you know, propagated, like, what an insult. We can call for a referendum, because actually what we can do is say, look at the conversation we've had, and I feel hopeful. I've been hopeful because I'm so joyful as to be, I suppose, the solidarity and sisterhood that an empathy has been demonstrated from yourselves and so many others who have said, oh my goodness, never thought of it that way. I'm not changing my boat, because I believe that everyone's human right includes disabled people.
I just,
Margaret, I'm going to come to you next.
Can I make one quick point? I just want to say, the idea, the sentence, thank you for sharing that, but the idea that people are sort of underperforming economic units, this capitalist idea of is sort of really...
And that's exactly where I was going to come to with Margaret. And I think Anne-Marie has made a very good point that this is a capitalist referendum. Margaret, do you think, and these are woeful echoes, but they are echoes, do you think this referendum enshrines the idea of useless eaters? Do you think that's what it does?
Absolutely. Useless eaters was a phrase used by Hitler to justify the annihilation of thousands and thousands of disabled people in Hadamar, especially in Germany, before, in fact, he started gassing Jewish people. He used Cyclone B on disabled people to see if it worked. And then they sterilized people who had disabled children so they wouldn't have more disabled children. Now, I don't think we've quite reached that point in Ireland, but the mentality and the ideology behind this, the language of burden and giving the carers the money, so, or whatever they're going to do, they say now they're going to give the money for looking after us, is exactly the same. We haven't moved much forward. I feel very let down by my feminist women groups in Ireland, because I am a feminist and I am a woman. So do I fight for women's issues or do I fight for disability issues? But in actual fact, I'm a disabled woman and they haven't included us, and we feel isolated and alone and not supported. And there's, I don't know where to locate myself anymore. At one point, I had various political parties I would vote, not the ones they've got in at the moment, I hasten to add, but the ones, the opposition type party, but they've all voted yes. Where do I go to a women's group? Because most of the women's group have joined this yes vote. And I'm rejected, and as an older person, I'm supposed to be dead by now. By the way, I have spent two spells in a nursing home. No, three spells in a nursing home. Two were respite, alleged respite. One, I lasted 24 hours when the nurse tried to tell me what a tea bag was. I was out there like a shot. And I was with my twin sister, and she picked up the tea bag by its string and said, this is a tea bag. I looked at my twin sister and I said, let's get out of here. The second one, my sister was in a wheelchair and wanted to look over the balcony to the sea in the far distance. She raised up her wheelchair and they banned her from going out of the balcony anymore, because she was obviously out of control in her wheelchair. I mean, I lasted 3 days in that place. I mean, it's absolutely ghastly. The older you get, the harder it is. And there isn't one person at the moment, at this point in time in the political agenda on this one, really speaking up
that's
for us.
That's the crucial.
Catherine Connolly had said writing.
I want to push in, Margaret, because we're hearing two.
They're not speaking up. They're not saying.
They're changing their minds now. They're changing their minds in some of the, like, you know, they're gone half-arsed at this. And you may have seen this. Well, what we're going to do, guys, by the way, for all of you who are upset by this, is we're going to vote yes. But on next week, at some point, we're also going to go and then ask for, you know, the more to be done, more supports to be done. Now, Amory, you're looking at me now. You get exactly what I'm saying here. It's this kind of, you know, I reminded all the time. I use this quote all the time. Bernadette Devlin McCallisky said it to us one time, Martin, and it scared the life out of me, where she said, everybody says solidarity, and they say, solidarity, I'm behind you. But they never tell you just how far behind you they're standing.
And I think we need, and I'd like to come to each of you in turn. What is it you want? Anne-Marie, if I could start with you, what is it you want?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for that, Martin. But just to touch on what Martin was talking about, like when we started speaking out, you know, pitching us in with a protest vote, right-wing Christian values, like trying to silence us, it beggars belief. So what do I want? I want this referendum to fail, send a strong message to this current government so that we can have a conversation around what does equality of men and women and people actually look like in this country? And I want us, without a doubt, what a platform it has given disabled feminist women and our supporters to finally have the conversation, because I don't think actually we've really had it before. So I suppose we really have to thank government for their ableist attitude and sexist attitude, because it allows us to speak out. So I want women and men to vote. I want them to be brave. And I want feminists, non-disabled feminists, to say, I am absolutely with you. I don't even want an apology at this stage now for making a mistake. Once they vote no to 42B, and that will be good enough for me, and then we can come together and continue to come together and say, right, we need to get this right. We need to actually bring Ireland forward. I mean, we're one of the only countries that does not have the right to social services. We're the only country that doesn't have a right to personal assistance services. You know well, the dogs in the street know that actually the reason it suits the state to exclude disabled people, because the numbers of homeless people will be even worse than it is. So let's keep people locked up in warehouses, dehumanised. You know, like, listen, we're celebrating 100 years since the foundation of the state, and we have a state that actually, you mentioned it, there's colonialism going on in this country, there's apartheid, and yet at an international level, you know, there we are fighting for the rights of everyone. Well, actually, you know what? We need to have parity in this country as well as on a global scale. And I can tell you there are disabled people and others around in this country that have been treated really badly. But this referendum has afforded us the opportunity to begin that conversation. And we need to ensure it fails so that we can continue the conversation.
Thank you very much for that, Anne-Marie. Stefan, up there in beautiful Donegal, you tell us, from your point of view, what is it you want from this?
I would like some respect for people with disabilities, for older people, and for the supporters, the people who support them. I would like support for the supporters. If you support the supporters, they can help. They can do their job. But what I would also like is, I'd really like to see the government do something about independent living in this country. It is shocking awful. You only have to look at the transport system. It is, I mean, if I get the bus from Donegal to Dublin, there is no wheelchair access on the bus. So how the heck does someone who needs accessible transport get to Dublin? It's the same with Galway. No accessible transport system. They put a new road network, roads all around here, and the size of the curbs on them. My good grief, you would nearly need to climb. It's like climbing a mountain. And you thought to yourself, where is the accessibility in that? That is a footpath that is out of the dark ages nearly. It's so inaccessible. And if they're not going to think about elderly people and people with disabilities, then what about mothers and fathers with buggies? And it was all around a school. It was, they put it up because they wanted to prevent people from parking because they were going to pick up their children. And it, that was what counted, and no one else mattered. So there's a mindset that has completely and utterly rejected anyone who doesn't fit a certain criteria that the government, the county councils, everything the state bodies have in their mind. And they ignore everyone else, and they have completely forgotten and excluded people from society. It's almost like people are trapped in their houses because of the system that's set up so inaccessibly. And it seems to be the case with everything. And any time that you go to try and resolve something, there is another barrier. There's another hurdle you have to jump over. And it is so frustrating. And I would like the system to be made easier so that when I'm going to look for something for myself or for my mother, I don't have to fight my way through everything. And that's the way it feels. It feels like you're fighting your way through everything. It feels like you're fighting for basic rights. I mean, these are all basic rights. We shouldn't be fighting.
If you can't, if you can't attest the right, you don't have it. And this is the way it works here. Sorry, Martin, go.
Margaret, I'm going to come to you last because you are perfectly imperfect. You are a woman. You are disabled and you are elderly. You are thrice excluded from society. I want to hear how you feel about going cap in hand, be asked to be recognised as an equal member of this society.
I'd like to give them all a tea bag and say I do know what a tea bag is. I am thrice excluded, thrice discriminated against. And I think it is absolutely horrific. We had a terrible time through COVID where we wondered whether we would be put in the ICU unit with respirators because they were short of respirators. We knew we wouldn't be because you're past your sell-by date. And you're almost past your sell-by date as a citizen. And it upsets me very much to be seen past my sell-by date. It upsets me that I'm treated like a child and a pat on the head every so often and the change out of the drinks machine when you're sitting behind someone in your wheelchair and they decide not to take the change and they turn around and say, would you like to change? And you feel like saying something. This referendum has sparked a bonfire that will not be put out. When we had the millennium 2000, we all got candles. In England, they had bonfires all around the coast. Fire, the light of the candle, the light in the dark places. We have to have light in the dark places. We have to light those bonfires politically. And we have to say, look at us, see us, we are there. I'd like to see far more disabled people in the Dáil, because the present crowd has not represented us. Far more older people in the Dáil, because the present crowd has not represented us. I haven't lost my fierce feminism over this referendum. But I do know that those of us who are working on the no vote are on the side of human rights. I do know that no vote is the only vote that is a human rights vote. It's the only vote we can do and say and cross on the sheet if we believe and respect and dignify disabled, sick and older people. Because otherwise, if we don't, the moral fiber of this country is going to go down the plug hole when we see old, sick and disabled people as less than a citizen of this country. We are equal citizen.
Brilliant, Margaret.
We are equal. No. We are equal citizens. And that's what I want, to be seen as an equal citizen.
Brilliant, Pete. Brilliant. I just want to make one point to the people who are listening, who are, you know, there's this idea out there, and I saw this awful analogy. Someone said, you know, you have a 30-year-old car and you want a new car, but you won't settle for the 10-year-old car. This was in the Irish Times, folks, by the way. You know, settle for the 10-year-old car. No, go back to the fucking dealership, excuse my language, right? And more importantly, just if you are in that camp that's thinking, you know, yes, and you don't want to change your mind because, you know, changing your mind is some sort of weird thing. No, it's not. You know, you actually, if you get better informed, or you get to listen to great people like we've got to listen to over the last half an hour, and you get better informed, you then change your mind. And finally on that, there's one other argument where they say a bit of jam now, you know, you're getting a bit of jam now and the hope that you might. So you take the jam sambo and you enjoy it now because it's okay. Again, on the merit that we won't ever get a jam sandwich ever again. Load of nonsense, because no matter what happens, and I don't mean to sound dismissive of this referendum, we are on the path to a united Ireland, a border poll, all of these things are going to happen. And the Constitution will be all up in the air at that stage. So there are going to be lots and lots and lots of times where we can actually get this right. But don't fucking settle for less. Excuse my language, but I'm just upset about the whole thing at the moment. So go ahead, Martin.
Anne-Marie.
I just want to, you know, bring it back to my family. And like my little boy thinks I'm the best thing since sliced bread. Now he's going to be 13, so he won't soon. But we've had the most incredible life together. I have my personal assistants. We have a good income. And he's got to travel. He gets to, in fact, our house is the one that loads of people want to come to. And I don't want that to change. I don't want him to grow up thinking that his mammy is less than all the rest. And we're trying to raise good children. God almighty, let the adults lead by example and treat everybody equal. That's what I want.
Margaret, we're going to give you the last word.
I have to tell you that I'm close to tears here. I really am very close to tears. I think it's so awful that people are more focused on the money side of things. People are more focused on the caring side of things rather than on the right side of things. I hope people will vote. I mean, I have told my personal assistants, which is a terrible thing to say to them. I even said it to them this morning because I wasn't feeling great. And I don't think I have that much left in this life. I said, don't put me in a nursing home. Please shoot me before I get there. Because I meant it. I actually meant it. Well, I haven't got access to guns, luckily, but what does it say of a society where older people are saying, shoot me, because they don't care about me. They don't recognize me. They don't acknowledge me. They don't respect me. They think I don't know what a teabag is. It's dire. And so I'm voting no, and I've persuaded a lot of people to vote no, and I'm delighted to be part of the no campaign. And I will be. It'll be no, no, no. From here to day, and anything that goes against our rights. We have a right to have rights.
Margaret, Stefan, Anne-Marie, thank you very much for having this conversation. And, you know, there are days I feel that I do have a disability and there are days I feel I don't. And I know that's the same for everybody. But I would like to say, and I'm not speaking for everybody else, but I'm speaking on my own behalf. I'm not asking anybody to treat me as equal. I'm fucking telling you, treat me as equal. I'm not giving you an option on this. Treat me as equal, or I will be in your face. It's that simple. And I think maybe that this shambolic referendum has sparked that. We don't have to ask you. We simply have to demand what's ours by right. That's that simple. Thank you again, Margaret. Thank you again, Anne-Marie. Thank you again, Stefan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You guys were brilliant, and I hope everybody listens to that and understands why this is so important. Get out and vote. Vote no. We're putting our thumb on the scales firmly here. Vote no, and make sure you show that it actually, a rights-based society is what we care about, not this economic unit bullshit. We'll talk to you all very, very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.